Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Board Games Anonymous, the podcast with board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is episode 492, Top 100 Games of All Time, number 90 to number 81. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hey friends, again, we are back and we are going through our Top 100 Games of All Time, number 90 to number 81. Anthony, it always gets more interesting as we go.
It does, yeah. It's, I don't know, I feel like the top 50 is always more interesting than the bottom 50, or vice versa, however you want to word that.
Sure.
Because this is where all the new stuff kind of pops in. Although this year is definitely different, because we retired so many games 2 weeks ago.
We did.
Put them in that Hall of Fame. So there's going to be a lot of games that are no longer on the list that we still like, but we have to fill the gaps. But really, yeah, there's a lot of stuff here. It's just kind of, it's new, it's sliding around, it's fun.
Gotcha. So, Anthony, we got a great list. We got some time to really get into them, talk about some of the fun stuff about them, talk about some of the experiences, talk about some of the great game designers, publishers, writers, artists, so many great people that made these games possible. So, with all of that said, let's get into the episode. Anthony, you want to start us off with your number 90?
All right. Number 90 for me is, I don't even know if we qualify this as a board game, although it is.
What?
Just like how we talk about these types of games.
Oh, all right.
It is a miniature skirmish game.
Mm.
How did this get on my list? I don't know.
Pew, pew.
Star Wars Shatterpoint. So okay. Of all these random miniature games that I've picked up over the years, because I like the minis or I want to paint them or I think I'll play them and then I don't. This is the one I actually played. Okay. And I have liked quite a bit. I reviewed this a few weeks ago. I played it earlier this year, and it is a tactical skirmish game where you build a small team of Star Wars characters. The miniatures are slightly larger than what you get in Legion, but you're not building an army. It's characters fighting off against each other, but it's a lot more interesting and has more depth than something like Imperial Assault, which also had a tactical skirmish mode, but that was a little more boiled down because it was coming out of the board game system. It's expensive, which is really the main downside. Like, if you want to, these are like, you know, tabletop miniature game quality miniatures. So you're paying for them. Each team is like $30-$40. But beyond that, it's a fantastic game. Like the system, the way the dice rolls work, the way you can maximize your abilities, the way you like shuffle through them and have to try to balance out when you're drawing cards or when you think you're going to draw cards to activate different units. It's really quite fascinating from a strategic perspective in a way that I haven't really experienced in other tactical games, which is really just like, move them here, move them there, move them here, move them there. At the end, it still comes down to the die rolls. And this game, as it comes down to the die rolls, but it also comes down to like how you build up to those die rolls, which I think is interesting. So, yeah, Star Wars Shatterpoint, it's my number 90. It's great. I have other Star Wars stuff on the list, but this is like my miniatures one. This is the one that kind of is filling that gap.
It's a pretty important gap since there are so many miniature games out there in the Star Wars universe. And so many skirmish games out there as well.
Yeah. No kidding. It's, you know, like I bought a bunch of Star Wars Legion stuff when they released that, like the whole first wave I have. And I really just never got it played. It was too hard. Open play was not good. Fantasy Flight before it moved over to Atomic Mass. I have Crisis Protocol stuff from Marvel, and that's fun too, but also really hard to get played. So Star Wars, the Shatterpoint's the first one I'm like, I can get it played. It's fun. It's easy to build a team. You only need 3 or 4 figures, so I can glue them and paint them relatively quickly. This is great.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm sorry I haven't gotten a chance to play it, but I'm looking forward to it. All right. So going to my pick, I guess on the opposite end, as far as we're looking, my number 90 is, I think, one of the modern day classics of all time in tabletop gaming. This is Zulkin, the Mayan Calendar from 2012. From Simone Luciani and Daniel Ciccini, the great pairs out there, and some amazing artwork from Milan Verzon and from our friends at CGE Games. Zulkin the Mayan Calendar was such a innovation in tabletop gaming, at least from when I got involved, because everyone was well aware of worker placement games. Very simple, right? You got workers, which allow you to take actions, and you place them on the board, and then you take those actions. And typically, especially a lot in the Euro kind of games out there, you feed people and you try to make points. Zulkin, the Mayan Calendar, does something slightly different, but so dynamic, because really what it is a worker displacement game. You probably know this game for really two beautiful artistic publication elements here. First is the giant dial that interlocks with 5 other smaller dials. So as the game goes on and the turns keep going, the other 5 smaller dials that allow you to take different actions, different resources and ability, they also turn too. So your worker placement in this case allows you to place them somewhere on those smaller dials. Now you can pay resources and money and such in maze to kind of move up, but basically you're placing them at the beginning start of it and then watching your workers go around as the round, as the big round wheel turns. And then you have to make a decision. When do you pull your workers off from those spots to be able to get those resources? So very thematic, right? As the city continues to turn, as the workers continue to work, they're typically getting more and more and better and more valuable resources, but obviously you have less, you know, actions and options to take. So it's very much a timing element to what is a traditional worker placement game, which of course has a lot of the elements of feature people, has one of those kind of classic elements of having all the different tracks you have to manage for victory points, and having those contract completions that you have to also hit that give you various bonuses throughout the game. And there's also a really cool expansion. I don't necessarily think it's essential to the game, that kind of specializes your particular faction coming into the board. But these dials, along with these beautiful blue skulls that you could pick up just that score maximum points in the game, is just really an incredible game. I've always enjoyed playing this game. It's always incredibly tense. With the base game, there are certain pathways to victory. Again, the expansion kind of opens that up and breaks that down a little bit more. But always an incredibly amazing, enjoyable experience that has not been eclipsed by anything else out there. Zulkin, the Mayan Calendar.
Yeah, this is an all-timer for me. It's on my list later. We'll talk about it more in a couple weeks.
Ooh, a yeah, couple of weeks.
I know, it's up there. Well, not way up there, but it's in there.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
All right, for me, I'm going to dive into a game that came out mid-pandemic. And there's a few of these games that are just, they're like a little weird just for like how I feel about them. But this one still sticks with me because I played it a lot by myself. And then I played it a lot after the fact. Well, not a lot of games kind of made it out of that.
that lockdown?
That lockdown phase where it's just like solo, solo, solo. And I'm like, I should share this with people. I'm like, nah, new stuff. So this is Merv, The Heart of the Silk Road. And it's it came out in 2020, obviously, like midsummer, like July. Mm-hmm. Just like deadest time. Like, no, you're not playing this game with anybody. And this is, like, I played other Fabio Lopiano games. Like, I really like Ragusa. I think Kalamala is a game we've talked about a bunch.
Yeah.
But this is the first one where I sat down and I was like, I really saw how elegant his designs can be. Like, such a limited number of rounds. Like, you have just three rounds in the game. It's such, you don't get that many actions. And yet, each one needs to be as efficient and interesting as possible because there's so many different things you're trying to do on this board. It's a beautiful game, by the way. This is Osprey Games, which does just wonderful productions in general for pretty much everything they produce. But then they went and got Ian O'Toole on top of that to do the artwork. So just a beautiful, beautiful production here. The game was relatively affordable, especially compared to the follow-up to this that came out this year, Sankore, which was very expensive. So like I was sold on the cover because I'm like, oh, I like Lopiano. Oh, I like O'Toole. That's a pretty looking box. But the game inside of it is just a fantastic experience. You have this great kind of rundel in the middle of the board where you're moving around and you're trying to place different things in these city rows and columns. And then, you know, there's walls that you're building and there's market stalls that you're trying to put in and you're trying to move across and trade things in these different places. And it is just really simplified. Like I can teach this game in, you know, 15, 20 minutes. I think this is a game that you and I played actually, like after I moved into my new house here, out on the porch.
Yes.
It was easy. It was quick. Very pretty. Got rained on a little bit.
It did. I was going to say that.
But yeah, Merv is, it's a great game. And it's surprised me that it stuck with me because it's one of those games that you play it and you're like, oh, that's really good. I really appreciate what it's doing. And then maybe it just kind of fades to the background. There's a lot of Euros that do that.
Yeah.
But there's enough depth here, emergent depth in the game where each play, I'm like getting something different out of it, that it really is an interesting Euro that goes beyond like what a lot of other Lupiano games do. So Merv, The Heart of the Silk Road.
A beautiful game, honestly, a very beautiful game. And as you said, I think in another time and place, this would have gotten a lot more attention and would have risen higher on my list. But yeah, I think it just gets lost. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, there's a, like, we could make a top 10 list of like games that got lost during the pandemic.
Yes.
Like, that just came out at the wrong time. They shipped at the wrong time.
Sure.
No one really got a chance to experience them. You know, I have a few of them downstairs, like Whistle Stop. Great game.
Oh, yeah. I remember Whistle Stop.
The Magnificent. Great game.
Oh, yeah.
And that just, you know, no one can play them with each other. So then they kind of fade away. And the half-life of games in our industry being what they are.
Yeah. Remind me. I'm not sure if I remember this correctly. There's a more recent, like last year, a new version of Merv came out. Not the same game, but like the designers made a more bigger kind of version, if I remember correctly. Like,
yeah, it's very different mechanically speaking. Yeah. It's by far the heaviest game Lopiano's ever made.
Sure.
It's like 3 hours long. Sankore, Pride of Matsumusa.
I remember seeing it.
But it is Lopiano and Ian O'Toole again. So it has like a very similar, beautiful production aesthetic. That's also a great game.
Yeah, and ironically, they kind of blur together for me now, which I feel bad about.
No, I mean, they would, right? Like, if you've only played each of them once, they're just kind of blend because they look the same.
Yeah.
It's different locations, kind of, but they're both still, like, in that same time period.
Gotcha. All right, well, number 89, I'm going to go small here. So I mentioned this on the last episode, talking about the top 10 of my list. For small box games to actually land with me and make my top 100 is high praise for me. Again, I like to play big games. I like to play games with multiple expansions, deep, complex mechanics, and a lot of other kind of fun stuff, or heavy thematic kind of games. So if I'm throwing small box games in my bag for game day, it means something. And one of the smallest box games that I do throw in for game day, and one of them that you and I played, Anthony, recently, because it's so easy to remember the rules, it's so easy to get to the table, and it implements one of the best, I guess it would be like press your luck kind of games, is For Sale. This came out in 1997 from Stefan Dora. There has been a lot of versions of this art-wise, and I think there was more recently a automobile version of this, which I gotta say, if you're going to play For Sale, and I guess especially in this economy, the houses, the homes, right, whether they are a cardboard box that's breaking down or a space station, almost feels, it just, it has more of a presence to it than buying and selling cars, I think. Because again, like, hey, I would live there, or I don't want to live there kind of situation. So this is an economic game, which comes down to basically two rounds of play. You start with money. You start with the same money as everybody else. And then you start building, you start bidding on properties. And then all the properties there are the same properties in each and every time. I think it's 1 to 35, if I remember correctly. So you generally, if you're card counting and have good memory, you generally have an idea of what everyone has, and or, at the very least, you know what you have. So if your numbers are scattered between the teens and the 20s, you know that there's higher cards out there that will trump you. So once you purchase all the properties, hopefully you don't go broke in this kind of auction press your luck mechanic. Then it comes down to now selling the properties, which is now another auction press your luck, where now you actually know what everyone has available as far as properties are concerned. So you really have to, you know, kind of place your bets here, right? You know what the different payment checks out there are for. You know what, obviously, just the general value is, but you're not sure what everyone's going to play. Someone's got that 35 and is going to win the big check. So maybe you play something lower, but you don't get the lowest. So again, you're playing against everyone at the table. And even if you have low numbers, you still have a good possibility of coming through with a good amount of cash and winning the game. For Sale, I picked this up a long time ago. I've always enjoyed it. It almost convinced me to buy the rest of their small box collection, but this one has stood above and above all the rest from Eagle Griffin Games. For Sale.
Yeah, I love For Sale. This is a great game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. You're like, if I put a small box game on here, it's great. I'm like, you put a few on so far.
I did. These are really great
games. Last week
and
this week.
No, it's no small praise, because it's just, it's never anything I think about. Like, you're really good about, like, you have like a bag or a box of like multiple small games when you come out. I just have like maybe five, and I'm just like, these are good. I like these. I'll play these. Yeah.
That's great. All right. Next up for me is not that small, but it's smaller. It's not one of my big Euros. This is a game that just came out, actually. It's pretty new, and I have actually played it a few times over the last few weeks, and it's really jumped up there for me, to the point where I kind of slotted it into my list after I ran it through everything, because I'm like, I think I love this game. Haven't reviewed it yet, because we've been doing these special episodes, and that is Harmonies. So Harmonies is a new game from Johan Benvenuto, who is not a designer that really jumped onto my radar at all for anything. I think the other games that they've done include like Cowboy Bebop, Space Serenade, and Braintopia. Like, nothing that's gone big. This one's going big. People are all about it. And the reason I found it is people were comparing it to Cascadia. And I was like, well, that's a good comparison. I like Cascadia. In it, you are drawing, you have like this tableau where you get to pull, you're basically drafting sets of little tokens that represent different types of terrain, and how you stack those on your personal board will decide what type of terrain it is, right? So you put a piece of wood down, it's just a piece of wood, but if you put green on top of it, now it's a tree, if you put water down, it's just a puddle of water. But if you draw a line with the water, now you have a river, right? You can put buildings out, get farmland, build mountains up to three high. And what you're trying to do is there's always going to be a tableau out there of available cards that you can draft into your own personal supply where you're trying to complete them. And those cards will show different patterns that you're trying to complete. And as you complete those patterns, you put, you pull the tokens off the card and place them onto your tableau. And you keep doing this until you fill your tableau, or everybody fills their tableau. So you're trying to maximize the amount of points you get by basically building a combo of different types of patterns that work together on your personal player board. And it's such a satisfying puzzle, right? Like, it takes those pattern building things of games like Calico and Cascadia, right? Mm-hmm. And it turns it into something a little more tactile and three-dimensional, and so much variability because of the number of cards in that deck and how they come out and how the tokens come out. And then you have the draft element to it, so the interactivity is there. Somebody could see, like, oh, you definitely need these two treetops. I could use them. I will take them, right? It's such a fantastic little... I was going to say abstract. It is an abstract, but it doesn't even feel abstract because it just... Everything is so evocative of the theme. And it's pretty. It's just a pretty looking game. And it's nature-based, which is always fun and chill to play through. So I've had a lot of fun playing this. I played it with a couple people, played it with the family, and I'm just playing it by myself a whole bunch. So I was like, last week or the week before, I was like, I guess this is in my top 100 now. This game is fantastic. So there you go. Harmonies.
This is where we live now. This is what we do.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so like, probably not going to review it because... We're not reviewing games again, like, on a normal episode for, like, 10 weeks, but it's a buy, and it's number 88 on my list.
It's an unofficial review there.
Right, yeah. This happens every time, where I'm like, yeah, this game made it on the list. I didn't review it, but just trust me, it's fine.
It's a good thing. I've seen this game, and, I mean, the cover alone drew my attention. Chris, when we had Chris from Board Games for the Better was on, he was just, like, lavishing this with praise. And I'm not an abstract fan, but this is certainly one of those games that I would definitely get into. Gorgeous, man. Like, gorgeous, yeah. Gorgeous.
It's very pretty.
Yeah. Yep. Maevda Silva, I believe, the artist here.
Great.
Fantastic job. And it was Spiller's Jars recommended.
It was, yeah. So it's not like it popped out of nowhere. No. It's just, when it came out, I'm like, I don't need another small box game like this. I have Cascadia and I have all these other games. And then, the more I saw about it, I'm like, I guess I'll try it. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is great.
Excellent. Well, talking about beautiful artwork, again, with a small box game, but I should say again, For Sale and this game, Sea Salt and Paper, also, again, it's a small deck game. I guess I should say these games are small deck games, not small box games, because they're typically basically one deck and maybe a couple of tokens and components. Sea Salt and Paper from 2022, Bruno Cathala, The Area. Again, beautiful artwork from Lucien Diran and Pierre Garaud. The artwork drew me to this, and that's always very nice because you have this origami artwork on the cards, and it's a different take as far as like artwork is concerned. What I really enjoyed about this game, and I've played dozens of times, is that it is again another small box game. For Sale is much simpler to teach to everyone, including your family. This obviously has a little more crunch to it, not much, but a little more crunch, a little more salty kind of crunch. Basically, what you're doing is you're drawing a card on your turn, and the card could be something that's available from one of the two discard piles or the actual draw pile, and that's where the fun kind of starts, because you're gonna build cards in your hand, and eventually you're gonna get two of the same cards. They will have a particular action that's connected to them, and then you'll be able to play them down, and that will give you a special ability, which typically is play an additional card, take an additional card, or several other things, including taking other cards from other players. Or your card is part of a matching set. Now you have set collection. Those set collections allow you to score additional points, and those cards stay in your hand. So you have special abilities, you have set collection, which is primarily kind of the mechanic here, and then you have, of course, the point scoring thing. The point scoring is really unique here, and I think this is what sets the game above and beyond a lot of other, you know, single deck card games here, because you're not just trying to win the hand or winning the trick. Basically, what you're trying to do is reach a certain points threshold, 7 in this case, and then make a decision. You could say stop, and then everyone scores the points on their cards, and, you know, you got some points, and whoever hits a certain point total score based on the number of players, like let's say 35, for example, you can win the game that way. But throughout the game, if you're doing well in that particular hand, you can decide to press your luck and then give everyone else one final turn. And if you come out with your bet and you actually score more points, you score the points plus the color bonus, all the colors that match the same card. The third thing that really sets this game above and beyond in a lot of ways is, a lot of times when you play small, you know, card box games, you can just run into those situations where you're just not getting the cards. And maybe you're not doing well round from round. Not to worry, there's an opportunity to if you are able to collect 4 mermaids, you win the game automatically. It's very difficult to do. I've done it twice. I don't know how, but wow. I've done it twice. And I've done it on Board Game Arena, so it is recorded. And it's a really great feeling. One time I did it on the first round, and I felt so bad. And then one I did it like almost at the end of the game, and it won me the game. So there's a lot of really cool ways. There's an expansion for this that I think it's Extra Salt that does add some new ways to score, and I think it's essential to the game. So because of the expansion, this game hits my top 100. And it's well recommended. Sea Salt and Paper. A lot of fun.
It's such a pretty game.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've had some pretty games so far.
I know. The artwork here is next level, my friend.
Yeah. I mean, For Sale is iffy, but the rest are very beautiful.
Yes. But For Sale's fun. It's like funny. Yeah. It's like it's that kind of family thing. Like when you look at some of those places that you might have to live.
Yeah, the cardboard box.
The melting cardboard box in the rain.
Yeah.
The tree house, or like, hey, a space station. You're like, sure. That makes sense. Yeah. I honestly,
the treehouse always got me though, because I'm like, I would live in the treehouse.
I would live in the space station.
Oh yeah. I'll take the 30 card, please.
Well, 35, right?
That's, 35.
I mean, it's good that they went to intergalactic with that. Although there's those two poor astronauts are going to have to live up there for what, six more months or something.
Yeah, we're going to be there for 2 weeks. Never mind 9 months.
Yeah, they're listening to the podcast right now. So hey, everybody,
hey up there,
Play For Sale and get a home on the ground, because seriously, it's not good for your body to be up there that long.
No. Oh, man. All right. So I'm going to jump to a bigger box.
Whoa!
Bigger box games. So this is a game that I stumbled upon at PAX. And it's an Uwe Rosenberg game, Noosfjord. But I stumbled upon it at PAX specifically because there was 3 of us in a group that were trying to find a game. People I didn't know. Like, we sat down, we're looking at something. And then this one was next to that, and there was 2 other people there. We're like, oh, it plays 5. Okay, we'll all just play this together. and I immediately was enamored with the game because it's Rosenberg. It's a great worker placement game. It's really boiled down. It just has the 3 resources. And it really just tightens the game up a lot, right? So some of his games have been big and sprawling to that point, and he was getting more and more sprawling at that point. This was like him pulling it back. I mean, like, let's just boil it down to bare necessities. And that's what this game will be.
Mm-hmm.
And it played, I think we finished it in 80 minutes. So it was like a full Rosenberg experience, less than an hour and a half with 5 people. And I was like, I love this game. I must own this game. so I tracked it down, and I've had it ever since. And what really sings about this one, like, it's not always the Rosenberg I'll bring to play at like game groups or whatever. Like, because not everybody loves it. Like, some people want the big, long, sprawling game. Some people want the tighter game with, like, the feed your people nonsense.
it's a legitimate mechanic.
Some people want polyominoes, like myself, and other people don't. But where this game really sings well is, A, if you have, like, 5 people, but you want something a little crunchy, but that's not going to keep everybody at the table for 4 hours, or solo play.
Yeah.
It is an amazing solo puzzle. Yeah. It's probably the best one of his. Ooh. As a worker placement game.
Okay.
For solo play. Like, I like it, the Gates of Loying, better overall.
Yeah.
But this one, just for pure solo play, I can play the game in about 20-25 minutes. And it has this basically built-in campaign mode where you're going to play it two or three times in a row using what's already set up. So you don't really have to reset the game very much. You can just like bang out three games in a row in an hour without having to really reset anything. And it plays really well because of how you're moving things around. Mm-hmm. Right. It has that mechanic, which he uses a lot, like he uses in a lot of his worker placement games of, you know, put one set of workers out. Those stay there for a round or two. They're blocked now. Now set place another set out. Those will stay there for a round or two. Now reset and pull the first one out. But in this game, it's so much better because of how tight and focused it is. Like it forces you to like program out what you're going to do based on what cards come out. And I really love that. So Nusfjord for me is it hits the table pretty regularly because of that. Like if I'm feeling up for a Rosenberg and don't want to spend 30 minutes setting up one of the bigger ones, I pull this one out.
You don't want to spend that much time with Uwe, right? You're just like, but I don't like you.
I want to spend that much time playing. I don't want to spend that much time setting it up. I pulled a Feast for the Odin out the other day.
Oh, that's the opposite of this.
Yeah, it took like 40 minutes to set up, and I played that game like 100 times. I'm like, man, this game is too much stuff.
It's like, are you done playing that? Like, I'm not even done setting it up.
Yeah. Caverna's the same problem. There's stuff everywhere. But this one, like, three resources, dump them in a pile, I'm good to go. Let's do it.
Sounds so fishy, man. Just saying.
Use for it. Love it.
I think it's better at the solo. I think it feels more puzzly.
Yeah.
As far as the game's concerned. It doesn't, like you said, it doesn't feel like his other games that are so expansive as far as choice is concerned. It feels like there is a directive as far as victory is concerned. And like if you're looking for a Rosenberg puzzle, I think this is, like you said, one of the best as far as that's concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm.
All right. We talked about bigger games. So, Anthony, the big game here. Mysterium from 2015. Oh, yeah. You get to be a psychic and work with other psychics to divine all of these mystical, spectral dreams about murders that have taken place because there's a ghost, and the ghost hits the most, and I won't say the name three times. But you have this super amazing, cool D&D-like screen. And talk about setup time, Anthony. This game, it takes some serious setup time because you have to set up the cards for everyone to use. And then you have to set up duplicates of the cards that are essential to solving the mystery on your big board. So there is some setup time, and you if you are, I guess, the spirit here or the GM/DM here, you're doing some setup, man. So originally this came out from, I guess, in Poland, and I cannot pronounce a name, although I cannot pronounce many names, so forgive me on all of those different things. But when Mysterium came out in English, I was all on board. I remember seeing Mysterium at the convention. I think it was at Gen Con. Amazing booth, like just
so cool
spooky booth. And I've played this with family, I've played this with gamers, I've played this at parties. You know, you wouldn't think of this as a party game, but people really get down for it because, again, one person is trying to give clues with these really amazing Dixit kind of artwork. And Xavier Coalette, who I just mentioned last episode for Dixit Journey, same artist, but there are also many other artists included in the set. It's just a really cool Scooby-Doo kind of adventure with people trying to figure things out, and they get to kind of wager against each other. So inevitably they are working together, but it's co-op, but it's competitive at the same time. And really you're trying to give clues through the cards. But it's not one of those games where you're giving everything away. And again, the artwork is gorgeous. Big fan, Mysterium from 2015.
Mysterium is such a cool thing to exist. Like, it's a fun game, right? Don't get me wrong. Like, I have fun playing it. Mm-hmm. But more than that, it's just a cool thing.
Yes.
Like, I love what they did. Like, I appreciate it as a piece of production out of someone's brain.
Yes.
And it's beautiful to look at as well.
Yeah, all the different components to it. I mean, there's other versions of this out. There's expansions, which I would recommend the expansions, of course, because it just adds more great stuff to the game. There's Mysterium Kids, so you can play with your kids. There's Mysterium Park, which is a shorter version of Mysterium. that takes out the weapon, which, you know, might make things better for certain audiences. And it's a little more condensed and compact. I have that too. I do recommend that too. But Mysterium, the big version, Anthony, like you said, like it's a masterpiece as far as production and artwork and intrigue and just exuberance. It's great. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, I remember having a very funny conversation with my students about this because in my game class, they have to go out and play a game outside of class on their own, go learn it somehow, play it, bring it in and discuss it. And one group came in and they're presenting about Mysterium. I'm like, how did you find this slash learn it yes. slash play it? These like 18, 19 year old kids who've never played anything more than Monopoly. And then at the end, they're like, we went to the board game cafe and they set it up and taught us how to play. I'm like, oh,
that's great.
But they loved it. And one of them went and bought it. And I'm like, well, have fun teaching that now.
Sure.
But it's like, but it is something anybody can enjoy as long as you have like that one person there to shepherd you all through the experience.
Absolutely. And again, it's something you could bring to game. It's something you could bring to a party as long as you are up on the game and you can kind of walk everyone through because there's one person that's like running the game, so to speak.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And again, there since then, Anthony, and I think you know this, there's been so many attempts to match Mysterium, so many of these kind of like psychic detective games. Don't even come close, like not even close to this. So,
yeah.
Modern day classic. Great stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next up for me, number 86, I've got Tiny Towns from 2019, designed by Peter McPherson. And so this is an AEG game, which means there are like a bunch of expansions for it. That's what they do. So there've been, I think three full expansions, one of which came out this year. And then a bunch of like promos and micro expansions. The basic idea of the game is, and there's a lot of games like this, it's a flip and write effectively, but you're building. So there are cards that will flip over every round that affect everybody. And they represent different building materials. They're cubes. And you take those cubes and you place them on your personal player mat. What you're trying to do, though, is create patterns with those cubes that match one of the several different types of buildings that are set up at the beginning of the game. So there are different types of buildings. I think there's 7, maybe 8 with some expansions that will correspond to a card. And there's multiple cards. So each time you play, you can have a different card out. Right. So let's say your tower is Grove University or your little hut is, you know, a farmer's hut, or you have a well. Right. Once you have that shape on the map, you can remove those cubes and replace them with the building in one of the spaces. So as you play, your whole grid starts to fill in. You run out of space. So again, if you're sensing a pattern here with games I like, it's an efficiency puzzle. Like you're trying to get as much stuff down as you can in the right order. And each of those buildings that you place has a scoring objective. So there'll be things like, you know, you get 5 points for each of these that's in a row with the same thing. Like, so it's a row of taverns or whatever. Or the houses are worth points if they're next to wells and farms, right? So you're trying to put everything in the location so it's next to the right stuff to be able to accomplish these things. Eventually, you can't place anything anymore because you just ran out of space, and then your game is over. And everybody gets to go until they can't go anymore. It is a game you could play. It plays with 4, but you could play with as many as you have components for, really. I think I played this at Gen Con, like a print and play type of version with what are those guys from Board Game Geek, the Murphy Brothers or something. But they ran this at like a big group thing. There was like 50 people in the room, and that was fun. Even you're just like drawing on the paper. So Tiny Towns, fantastic little game. Again, I play it mostly solo, but it's also a game I play with my kids. I brought it to game nights. Other gamers like it. If you're not a big fan of like flip a thing, everybody does a thing, it is that, right? But it's not writing, right? You're not rolling and writing or flipping and writing. It is legit like game components on a board, which I think really helps, especially people who like want something more tactile.
Absolutely. Again, another game for me that I would not think would be great just from the generic abstract look of it, but fantastic gameplay. Mm-hmm. All right. Talking about a game that goes way back. I was really fortunate. We talked about this on a podcast a long time ago. I was fortunate to pick up this game that was out of print and supposedly never coming back into print because of legal issues. This is from 2007, way back in the day. Colosseum. Colosseum is all about creating the most spectacular event at your Colosseum for everyone to be able to see, but especially Caesar and all of the different senators. This game is from Days of Wonder, at least the original that I was fortunate enough to pick up a copy of. And there has been other copies. There's been other versions of this. Tasty Minstrels Games came out with a copy on Kickstarter, I believe, back in the day. And the artwork was so bad that there was just like, it was bad. It was bad for them. People were not happy about that. And there is going to be another version of this. Fantasia Games is coming out with a new version of this. It looks like a little bit more realistic and mature. Basically, this game, the basic mechanic of this game seems very simple. It's a roll and move, right? Because you are moving Caesar and the different senators around the board in order to activate certain spots, in particular in your Colosseum, that allows you to score additional points in the game, give you opportunities for special abilities. But primarily what the game comes down to is two elements. One mechanic is set collection, because you're trying to put on the best possible show at the particular Colosseum, and then ideally try to line that up with people who are visiting your Colosseum at the time. The more important the people, the better. That's challenging because there is an auction bidding mechanic that comes into play with different elements that could be put into your performance. So maybe you would have gladiators, maybe you would have lions, maybe you would have different artworks or plants or different performers. They go out on the board and you are bidding for those different sections against other people based upon the money that you're able to make through the performances. And at the end of the game, no matter what you're able to do, everything early part of the game is really funding and fueling the end part, which is, again, producing the best performance possible, lining up with the visitors at that particular time. Board Game Geek talks about it, as far as weight's concerned, as a 2.76. I think that's a little on the heavy side for this game. I think it's very accessible for a lot of people. Families can certainly get down and play this. And it's nice to have that really cool set collection where you were able to put together that big performance. And the performances are laid out for you at the beginning of the game, so you know what you want to shoot for at each particular round. But it certainly scales up and up again. I think it reminds me a little bit of Distilled, as far as like getting the right combination in play at a certain particular time, and then trying to build a better one and a better one as time goes on. Production is top-notch. It's Days of Wonder at its best. It's Colosseum from 2007.
Great game. Yeah, I remember playing this for the first time and being like, oh, I want this. And everybody's like, no, sir, you may not have this. And I remember when you found it, too, it was like, you got to buy it. And you're like, I don't know. Like, you got to buy it.
It was like full price. So I was just like, yeah. It's a lot of money. And you're like, it's out of print. I'm like, ah. That was back in the day, kids, where there was things called friendly local game stores. And they had games. And those games were not listed online. So you actually had to visit stores to find games, especially games that were out of print.
Crazy. It's crazy.
That no longer happens. No longer happens, but...
No, not anymore.
Yeah.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right. My number 85 is Dominant Species Marine. This was our game of the year back in 2021.
Nice.
And the follow up to a game that you retired in our Hall of Fame 2 weeks ago, Dominant Species, which came out in 2010. So designed by Chad Jensen, who, you know, sadly passed away a year or so before the game came out. This is a re-implementation of Dominant Species in a pretty much every way possible. The core mechanics are the same. It is a worker placement game in which each player plays a different species that is trying to be dominant across the map. This time you are playing strictly in the water versus Dominant Species, which was on land. But it's the basic idea is the same. Now, where it tweaks it a little bit is it tightens the map up a little bit. It shortens things down. The worker placement's modernized a little, so it's not purely programmatic. It is programmatic, but it's not purely programmatic in the way the first game is, which allows a little bit more strategic thinking that wasn't there in the old game. And then everything's a little more modular. So the asymmetry that comes in is through the cards, which kind of builds out over at the beginning for sure, then later throughout the game. The result is a game that plays better with, you know, like 3-4 players and shorter, like 2 to 3 hours. Whereas the full game was lots of people, very long. So this pretty much fundamentally replaced Dominant Species for me. Like that game was almost impossible to get to the table. This one is much easier. It's much more accessible. It's not friendlier. You're still attacking each other the same way, but because it's not so long and because it doesn't have those things kind of coming out of left field like Dominant Species, it's much more balanced in that way. So it is definitely the best version of this formula and my favorite area control game of this type for sure. Dominant Species Marine.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, with the exception of this is higher on my list.
Ooh, so you could agree with me more.
Maybe I could. Maybe I could, Anthony. Maybe I could. All right. Well, I'll talk about that one later or earlier. We don't know. It's going to happen at some point.
Which it's coming.
All right. My number 85 is Revolution from 2009. This has a soft place in my heart. But again, I think because it has a soft place in my heart, this is one of the games that you and I, Anthony, bonded over very early on. Yeah, and we got a lot of play at Myriad Games way back in the day. This is from designer Philip DeBerry. And it's a really interesting game because it utilizes bluffing, some element of deduction as far as where, you know, what people's bids are going to be based upon how they are filling the board spaces up. And it utilizes area control for those different areas. So basically what you're doing is you are, again, dealing with a revolution coming to the city here. And you're using force, blackmail, and of course, gold to be able to influence powerful people in that city. Now, each person in that city can be influenced by one of those three particular forms of coercion. And some of them take one or two. Some of them just take one type. And basically, you're trying to, like, you know, blackmail the priest, or maybe you are trying to force the printer to support you. So you place your bids out there, everyone plays their bid secretly, you reveal, and if you win, you get to do that particular action of that particular person in that city. So it might give you additional resources, like the rogue will give you two additional blackmails, or maybe the spy will allow you to replace one influence with a cube of your own. And that allows you to gain area control in different places in the city. And eventually that allows you to score victory points at the end of the game. It's really fun. It's really tight. And it has a lot of really cool player interactions as far as the bidding's concerned. You could play a nicer version of it where you don't lose your bids. I know sometimes when people play these kind of auction bidding games, they don't like to lose. But there's a really lot of cool effort and, you know, techniques to it. The expansions make the game significantly better. That's why it made my top 100 list. So I would say the expansions are essential. This is typically primarily under Steve Jackson Games. Pegaspiel has a version of this that's very nice. There is a Pathfinder version of this, but you really want to play with the expansions, or you want to play with the full board, including the full player board that gives you an additional roll of action. So Revolution from 2009. A great bluffing deduction auction game.
I haven't played this game in a very long time, but I have very fond memories of it because, like you said, this was like one of, if not the first games we played together.
Sure.
And then we played it several times because it was like, this is great.
Yeah.
And to the point, I think we gave away like 20 copies of this
at a charity event.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, it, great memories from Revolution.
A lot of fun and still a good time. As far as auction bidding games are concerned, Blind, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. 84 for me is Carpe Diem. This is the 2018 Stefan Feld game, which unfortunately is most famous for having like five different versions over the course of like 18 months because they kept printing it wrong. Like, we got a new one. They're like, yeah, this color's off now. They're like, ah, okay, now we got a new one. Like, now this color's off. This is a game in which you will move your little meeple around a rondelle where you'll be able to draft different tiles that represent pieces of buildings. You put those buildings on your personal player mat, and you're trying to create different things that are worth points in different ways. There's a lot of different ways you can score in this because it's a Stefan Feld game, but it's not like super point salady. It's still relatively tight compared to his other games. And the real reason I love this game, it's not just the tile placement and like the building of like these different size and shaped locations. It's the scoring mechanism. So at the end of each round, you're going to place your disc onto this space where the scoring happens, which is a layout of cards, which is randomized at the beginning of the game. And then between each of the cards is a space for a disc. And when you do that, you will score based on where you've placed that disc. So you're choosing after the end of each round what you score, and you're blocking off scoring opportunities for other people. So sometimes it might be like, these are all bad for me, but that one's good for you. I'm going to go there, right? I've now stopped you from gaining points and helped myself. So there are set development things. There are like, get the most windows or have the most, you know, oceans. There's also like lines and stuff that happen across the sides of the board on your player mat based on like where things go and how you're going to score them, which is all interesting as well. But really, it's that scoring mechanism, which every time I play it, I'm like, God, I really like the way this works. The main problem the game has, and I have the first edition, I think, of this game, is some of the tiles are supposed to be different colors, and they don't look like different colors. So you have different like eras of tiles that are supposed to come out, different types of tiles, and a lot of different shades of green that basically all blend together. I think finally, the version that you can buy now addresses this. Like the white box cover, but you know, it hurt the game over the time. I think a lot of people are just like, I can't see this. It's not colorblind friendly. Sure. Even if it is, if it's not low light friendly, the rondelle in the middle, for whatever stupid reason, has a star.
Oh man.
Where you're moving across instead of in a circle, but it's just a circle that's needlessly confusing.
Okay.
Like you're still going in a certain order. It's dumb. So, I can't speak for the production decisions that they made, but the gameplay is really fun, and it is one of the tighter, modern Stefan Feld games, and it makes my list for that reason. So, Carpe Diem.
Yeah. I'm surprised it's made your list because of all the problems, I'll be honest.
And yeah, but those things are just annoying. They don't really influence the game.
I'm just trying to remember which awkward version of this did I actually play.
Yeah, probably one of the early ones. And the early people got annoyed at the early ones.
Yeah, because I did not enjoy my play of this. And I am, you know, a huge Stefan Feld fan. And I think this was like his middle period where it almost seemed like, I don't know. I don't want to say anything bad about the man because he's a genius and I can't. But I mean,
but there was definitely a period where it was like,
this is his lull, right? It's not.
Yeah.
There's like a couple of games around this time. Like there's like three games around this period where I'm just like, when they first came out, I was like, Stefan Feld. I was like, all right.
I mean, I would say like the six games he released before the City Collection, most of them weren't very good. Like this is my favorite from that period, but like you had Forum Trajanum, which was just actually bad.
Sure.
Revolution of 1828, not good. Castles of Tuscany, not great.
Yeah.
Cocapelli, bad.
Sure.
This one I like a lot. It sticks out for me.
I would even give, like, again, Bonfire is a little just it's challenging.
Deadly. Yeah.
And I know you're a big fan of Merlin. I have it too. I mean, you have the expansions, I think opens it up. But I think Feld, I was surprised. That's all I'm saying about that.
Sure. No, totally.
So yeah, I think this was a weird period. And then obviously the City Collection's a whole different story, which we've gotten into many times.
Right.
So yeah, hopefully the Civolution is a great game. So
I hope so.
Come back, Feld. You're so great.
Please. It's been a while.
Yes. Alrighty then. Feld, no, don't go. All right. My number 84 is Korra, Rise of an Empire from 2021. This was a game that really surprised me. This is from Yellow Games, this is weird to say, from their designer, Headquarters Simulation Game Club. So I don't know how to feel about that. Again, I like when the individual designers are listed. I guess that was always something that like was a really particular big thing with designer board games. So it's a group of designers. Let's just leave it at that, I guess, for the moment. This was really funny because when this came out, this was listed in Yellow's expert series, right? It had the word expert in it. It's a 2.74 on Board Game Geek. I don't find it expert level, but again, everyone's expert level will vary. It's certainly on the heavier, if not the heaviest side of their games for Yellow. And basically what we're looking at as far as the game's concerned is you are dealing with the growing of one of the city-states in ancient Greece, and you start out as one of the particular factions in the game, and along with the factions come special abilities, which is always great to see. Four different special abilities that are unique to you, but are reflected in different elements on the game board. That particular city-state that comes along with it comes along with a player board, and you're going to have your individual three tracks that come into play. As you raise those tracks, you'll gain special abilities and also gain victory points throughout the game. Now, based upon your particular city state, some of those tracks might be more important to you than others. Now, what the game really kind of shines with is this Race for the Galaxy kind of selection of abilities that happen. But everyone gets the same seven abilities from these different aspects of the city. So philosophy, military, trade, politics, legislation, development, culture. You secretly choose your particular one or two actions, and then everybody flips them over simultaneously. And then in particular order of that particular ability, you take those actions. Those actions will give you a number of different things, as I just previously mentioned. And really what it comes down to is a number of different things, but primarily it's tracks. You have tracks that score points, you have tracks that manage your culture, tracks that manage your population, tracks that manage your military, and then there are quote-unquote expeditions to different lands where you do things, I guess, and you bring back treasure, and that's highly based upon the military that you have in play. Anthony and I played this a bunch of times. You would think, oh, you just have to go to the military. And most of the factions that you do get to play are military based, but you can win with economic victory. I have done it. It's a lot of fun. Very colorful, very dynamic game. Love selecting the special abilities. There's cards that come into play that give you scoring opportunities throughout. And then there's global effects that you have to deal with every particular round. So Korra, Rise of an Empire, a very good, I would say, midweight game that you could play with a lot of different people, gamers at the table.
Yeah, yeah, this was a big surprise. We just, you know, when we stumbled upon it at PAX, I was, remember thinking like, oh, okay, this looks like another generic yellow game, but it, no, it really sings. It's almost a shame the way they marketed it.
Sure.
Because if you don't have a name on it, you can't say it's the next X person's game.
I know.
And if you say it's an expert level game, it really pushes some people away.
I appreciate their effort. I appreciate they went there, but I think labeling it an expert game, I think really scared people away, especially their crowd.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I know what they're trying to think, and it's just, you don't need to do that.
You should have said something different than expert.
Yeah.
Because like you and I, we look at games and says expert. Even I like shy away. I'm like, oh, it's an expert game. Like, does that mean it's like war game level?
Yeah, right. It's exclusionary. Like, and it's like trying to push people back. Like, no, don't try this. You're not going to like it. But like, no, you would. It's light.
It's light.
I played it with my kids.
Yeah.
I played it with my kids. They're not.
Yeah, you choose. Everything's in front of you. You choose the actions. All the actions are on the board. Everything's primarily visible except for some cards that are out there. And you're just trying to beat people to certain, you know, locations, certain tracks and things like that. So there's nothing crazy. It's a 2.7 on BoardGameGeek. You're fine. Anyone can play this.
Yeah. All right. Next up for me, 83. Which, it's a game I'm sure is higher on your list, but
what?
I'm gonna talk about it now real quickly. Lisboa.
Never heard of it.
Never?
What? Once. Who? Where?
Yeah.
Card game? Trick taking? CCG?
I don't know. It's got a bunch of mechanics. Oh, it could be all those things.
Okay.
this is with Talis Cerda's magnum opus from 2017 about the rebuilding of Lisboa after it got devastated by all the things. So
it did.
We got earthquake, tsunami, fire. Everything's dead. So you are doing all sorts of things in this game, rebuilding the city. Describing the mechanics would take longer than we've set aside for each of these games to talk about them. But I think what I really enjoy about the game is how deeply thematic it is. Like, despite the fact there are like all these potential actions you can take, whether you're influencing the court or rebuilding, clearing rubble or rebuilding the city or whatever it is you're doing, everything makes sense. So yes, there's 30 pages of rules. Yes, the game takes 3 to 4 hours. And yes, there's a ton of analysis paralysis, especially with the follow mechanic. But everything you are doing does make sense in context of the theme and of the rules and the way they're written. It's really like a lot of his games do this, maybe less recently, but historically, it's the reason why I like his game so much. Is it really builds theme into it. This game does it the best of any of those, I think. And the result is it's just this wonderfully crunchy, interesting, sprawling, beautiful, beautifully illustrated game that I remember when this came out because I had backed it. It was coming by a Kickstarter. Chris, you had not. And we were at Origins and they had it there along with Vital Lacerda.
They like, did. It comes from Vital Lacerda.
It did. You bought the game and then he taught it to us.
He did.
So it was just like a wonderful experience on my birthday being taught Lisboa by Vital Lacerda.
I have his
like,
signature on my game.
How much better could it be?
He should have came home and just taught all of his other games because they're really heavy.
I know. Like I still haven't played Inventions or Weather Machine. Like I need help.
That's right.
But this is the one that like when I think of all his games, this is the one where I'm like, yeah, this is the one. Like if someone's gonna like, what's the most complete? Probably Lisboa. Is it my favorite? No, we'll get to those later in future weeks. But it is the most complete and interesting and engaging design I think he's done.
Yeah, I have so much to say about this, but we'll save that for a future episode.
Ooh.
It might be a little higher, just a little bit.
Yeah, I know it's higher.
Shh, don't tell anybody, it's a surprise.
Yeah, no, it didn't used to be your number one at all.
Well, not everyone knows that. All right, again, going way back, going in the Wayback Machine, as we do. There's some amazing games in the Wayback Machine. So my number 83, Yggdrasil from 2011. This was a game, again, Anthony, you and I have played at Myriad Games way back in the day. And co-op games. I guess I'm going to say this a lot, Anthony, so you can kind of hound me on this. Not the biggest fan of co-op games. Mm-hmm. So when I put a co-op game on there, it's a meaningful game for me.
Sure.
Yggdrasil is a game about Norse mythology. And again, some of the fantastic features of it is you get to be one of the different gods of Norse mythology. You got Odin, Thor, Frey, Heimdall, Freya. I mean, just you basically have everyone in that pantheon coming into play. You also have all the famous monsters. And basically, again, I can go on for, I don't know, 20 or 30 minutes on just Norse mythology. But basically, if you know anything about it, it's here. If you don't know anything about it, it's here. And it's really great because it incorporates so many of the different stories in the actual gameplay, like the personalities and their special abilities that either you get to play as a character or as the different villain characters that are against you play out in a certain particular way. And I mean, they include everything here. So it's a battle in the world of Midgard amongst the world tree that's here in play. And it's a co-op game that you really get to make interesting decisions on your own without having to deal with alpha gamer kind of issues. And there's so many different ways. Like you can upgrade your particular character in play and gain special abilities against certain, you know, evil gods that you're fighting against. And you have to manage all of the things as they kind of spiral out of control and as the monsters become more and more powerful throughout the game. The artwork is great. It's old school, beautifully drawn games here. I am so sorry that I do not own a copy of this. It was probably out of print by the time I got around to it. And I know that they had, I think you picked this up, Anthony. They had a new version of this that Ludonaut had put out, or yep, one of the other companies that put it, Yggdrasil Chronicles. And it's just such a great game. It's just such a fun game. I had this on an app as well, and I played a lot of it on the app too.
Yeah, and the app doesn't work anymore, unfortunately. It was such a good game for that.
Yes, and again, that was especially way back in the day where apps really did not work well.
No, not at all.
I had so many of them, and like, does it have AI? No. I'm like, well, who am I playing against? No one's on. Doesn't connect to anything or do anything. This played really well as an app, and I love this as an app.
Yeah, this is a great game. I picked up a copy. There was like a small reprint that Board Game Geek sold.
Yeah.
Like maybe 1,000 copies or something. And I got that copy.
Yeah.
So it's somewhere in the basement.
It's like 3D, it's a great 3D elements of the tree and stuff.
I don't have that.
Okay.
No, that's like the upgraded Spooper Legacy-ish version. I just have the actual version of the game because the original is out of print.
Sure, sure.
And it's, yeah, it was one that I always wanted. Grailish.
Yeah.
I have it. But yeah, it's a great game. So next up for me at 82 is a game that if you'd asked me after I first played it, if it would be in my top 100, I would have said, no, that game sucked.
Wow.
It was such a bad experience.
That's harsh, man. Play.
It was such a bad experience. But thankfully, that was also in the era where I was backing everything on Kickstarter, even games I thought I would dislike. So
that was the gameplay we had at PAX, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Barrage.
Uh-huh.
It's designed by Tommaso Battista and Simone Luciani. And it was the infamous, terrible Kickstarter run by Cranio where it was really late and all the wheels were broken. When I got my copy, I literally couldn't play it because everything was warped so badly.
But to be fair, the wheels weren't a big part of the game, right?
No, not at all. You definitely don't need the wheels. That's what I'm trying to tell people. Like, you can still play the game. I'm like, how? I have to literally pick everything up every round and move it around the circle. I'm not doing that. So this is a game in which it's got like a weird, like sci-fi cyberpunky theme slapped on there, very Tesla-ish, but it's really just like you're building dams. It's water management.
But somehow it's powered by Spirium or something, right?
Yeah. It is a lot like Spirium, yes. Because they're like, here's a very boring thing. Spirium is just coal mining, but actually it's Spirium.
Yes.
This is just hydroelectric power, but actually it's Barrage,
yeah.
Right? It's not, which is fine. I don't care. Make it more interesting. But I just think it's funny that they have to do that.
Well, there was one of the designers was an engineer, right? Like a legit engineer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's there. Like it's heavy. It's very specific. The way the water flows mm-hmm. down the map. And that's what makes the game so interesting, right? Like everything is there. You can see what's going to happen in the future. but you're competing with other people to be able to influence that and benefit from it.
Yeah.
And it's super tight in that way. And you have to be very careful about what you do and how you do it and when you do it. Like, if you take a build action, you are committing resources to that build action that are now unavailable to you for several rounds, unless you take actions to expedite that. And trying to balance when you take those actions, how you take them, which of your available workers slash resources you use, how you use them, when you use them. The money is extremely tight in this game. The power is difficult to produce. All of those things come together to create a bunch of very interesting decisions. Now, when the game isn't good is when somebody doesn't know it and says they do and tries to teach you and does a terrible job of teaching you. That wasn't great.
Hey, look, I won that game, all right?
Yeah, you either really figured it out quickly or you got lucky or both. I'm not sure, but...
I didn't teach the game, though, to be fair.
No, you did not. No. That's, you're not the person.
That's not on me, man.
No. That's when we learned that people at PAX on the first and second day don't actually know the games they're supposed to be teaching.
Yeah.
And it's fine. It's a really hard job. I don't blame them at all.
Except for that.
They don't always.
That first year spoiled us.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah.
But I backed it anyways. I have it. I've played it. It's amazing. It is among my favorite games now. It's, I think the expansion content really isn't necessary. The game has so much. It's so complex already. It feels like a splatter game almost, just in terms of like every decision being so tight and everything you do affects everybody else in a negative way. So it's I don't need all the extra stuff that they're throwing at it, but it's great. Barrage eking its way onto the list at 82, but definitely happy to play this anytime.
Yeah, somebody mentioned this recently and I was like, this is another one of the games, like you mentioned with Uwe Rosenberg, where it's like, it's a really great experience. It is a hound to set up, that game. And, but I think one of the fascinating elements of this, if the game does it right, and Barrage does do it right, the challenge of, I am going to build a thing. Everyone sees that I'm building a thing. Everyone knows that I'm building a thing that's coming. And everyone else at the table is, their job is to take advantage of the thing that I built.
Yep.
So, I want to build a thing because it'll score me points, but it might score other people other points. And then at some point, that might be bad for me.
Right. And you're like, I could build a dam way down here.
Yeah.
And it's cheap, but all it takes is one person building a dam up here, and now I'm not getting anything, and I wasted that resource. Ugh. But if I build up here, it's really expensive. Or you'd be the other guy who's just like, I'm just going to put my power station here, and no matter where anybody puts a dam, I'm benefiting off of that.
Yeah.
So. No, it's great. It's a great game.
Absolutely. I'm glad they fixed all the things that were, you know, keeping it down, so to speak.
Yeah, now like nice, very thick, solid wheels now.
Yeah. Which are essential to the game. And I'm sure the game designer, who's the engineer, obviously was really bugged by that more than anybody else on the planet.
They were very upset. Yeah, and to be fair to them, they did fix it. We got replaced.
Oh yeah. So it wasn't he didn't build the game.
Just took a long time, that's all.
All right. A little bit of a surprising game here, I think, Anthony, but something you and I have enjoyed a great deal. My number 82, A Game of Thrones, the card game.
Oh,
nice. I'm going to put it here, second edition, that came out in 2015. Initially, I had first edition. I think either edition works really well. I don't think one is necessarily better or worse, but I think second edition kind of, I'm giving the win to the second edition for a couple of reasons. Obviously, you could still get it, probably, in some cases. First edition is kind of gone. But first edition certainly has its charms and nothing wrong with it. But I think they wanted to reboot it so that everyone can collect it. I remember when the first edition came out, there was so many videos about like collecting certain cards to making certain decks for like competitive play. And it was such a beautiful community at the time. And I think maybe it was, I don't know, the challenge of things going out of print. This was Fantasy Flight doing a great job. What really kind of attracted me to this game was the double feature of, you're going to have a role in that game. You're going to choose a role. And I love, and I talked about Korra a minute ago, where you want to choose a role that benefits you for that particular round, but you're not necessarily stuck with that role. It's going to benefit you in addition to what cards you're playing. What I love about Game of Thrones, the card game, is it really did have that CCG element in an LCG game. And this is from the designers Eric Lang and Nate French. And this was I think, in a lot of ways where Fantasy Flight Games was in their peak back in the day. And I love the fact that, if you're not a fan of, you know, Game of Thrones, I guess the one thing I would probably tell you should know is the interesting thing about Game of Thrones, and especially about this card game, is that the different characters that are in play from the different families that come into play, and you will play a particular family along with maybe a partner as far as joining factions together, which is also very Game of Thrones-ish, is that this is not just about a bunch of soldiers and warriors that come into play, but this is also about politicians and spies, and different people have different abilities that are just as strong, but in a different way than your big warrior knight, you know, battle tank kind of thing situation. And I thought, especially at that time, that was kind of revolutionary, because victory doesn't come just from arms. A lot of the politics, a lot of the backstabbing, a lot of the different how you tactically play, a lot of the special battlefields which you're going to decide to fight at is great. And it has enough real life, but a lot of fantasy elements that's just great for everyone to play at the table. The second edition obviously is easier because it has a lot of the factions more available in that kind of one kind of core box. But a fantastic fantasy game, a Game of Thrones, the card game, second edition, 2015.
This is one of those games that, like, we played so much early on that I'm surprised at how long it's been since I played it.
Yeah.
Like, I remember buying this at Gen Con when they released it, the second edition of the game. It was like, you and me and Daniel, like, let's sit down and play it.
Yeah.
Like, that night. And I don't know that I've played it more than once since.
Yeah, I mean, the original version came out in 2008.
Yeah. No, and had, oh, I loved it, like, the little pieces.
Yeah, those are great.
Yep. All right, my number 81, last one for this week for me, is Lorenzo Il Magnifico.
I've heard of this game.
2016. Yeah, it's a good game. This is also designed by Simone Luciani with Flaminia Brissini and Virginio Gili. So, like I did last week with two Rosenbergs back-to-back, this week I got two Lucianis back-to-back. Not on purpose, but that's what happens. Lorenzo is a Euro game in which you play, you know, a noble in the time of Lorenzo il Magnifico in the Italian Renaissance, and you are placing workers out onto this board to try to collect cards into your tableau to maximize efficiency and generate points, right? But the thing that makes the game so interesting is at the beginning of every round, you roll these dice and they're the same for everybody. They're shared, right? That is the value of your workers. Everybody has the same value of workers. I love this idea because it makes it so you know that somebody's used their six value worker already. You can see they put it out, right? They used their orange worker. That one's gone. So that's available to you if you want to use it still, right? And then like each column or each tower on the board is representative of one of the four different things that you can recruit into your tableau, right? So you could bring in you know, the green cards that are going to give you direct resources, or you can bring in the yellow cards that allow you to like trade and manufacture, or you know, like the blue cards, which are these different nobles and abilities and in-game scoring, and the purple. So it's they're broken down over the course of the game into different eras or power levels. So like the game is designed in such a way that everything kind of builds on itself. You're always building up and you're building out. And so every time you produce, for example, like take this production action, you're going to get more out of that, especially if you've set it up properly. So it's the perfect balance of really tight economy, very difficult action selection. Like, what am I going to do that's going to be as efficient as possible for me using the coins that I have? While at the same time, every time you take an action, every time you build on something, it's a little bit more, which is what I want in a Euro, right? You want it to feel like you're building towards something, you're collecting things, you're creating something. And this game really captures that really so well. I think the base game by itself is fantastic, but the expansion is very good, right? I have it mixed in with my game. I play with it every time. I teach with it. But I wouldn't say it's like one of those like, oh, I love this game because of the expansion. I just also like the expansion, the House of Renaissance, which throws in like new development cards, new leader cards, And that's one of the interesting things about the game too. It has these mechanics, like you have the leader cards that allow you to kind of decide the direction you're going to go, right? They like, here's a goal for you. It's secret. Now you try to accomplish it. The excommunication track, that's an interesting mechanism where you're trying to reach a certain level on this track so that you don't lose something at a certain point when the church decides to step in and say, hey, what are you doing over there? Right. But yeah, Lorenzo Il Magnifico, up there, one of my favorite Euros. White, white here, number 81 on the list.
Very nice. I agree with you. And I up you on a future episode.
Man, we got a lot of those this week.
It's a good game, man.
Yeah.
All right. My last game on the list is my number 81 game. This is super old school classic. I mean classic, like going back to like the 1950s sci-fi. Conquest of Planet Earth.
Ooh.
The space alien game. This is one of my favorite games because I'm a big sci-fi fan. I love those old throwbacks to the 1950s where there's so much political drama about the sci-fi aliens that kind of play out through these kind of cartoonish alien menaces that are attacking America. Hint, it's communism. that's what they were afraid of, the Red Menace. No need to fear. These are just lovable aliens that are all about destruction of the Earth. I love so many different elements. This is from Flying Frog Games, from Jason C. Hill, the designer, along with Jack Scott Hill, the artist here. And every time I go to a convention and Flying Frog Productions is there, I'm like, hey, let me tell you about my favorite games. And they're like, hey, yeah, it's a game we produce. We do a lot of other stuff. I'm just like, but wait a minute. It's my favorite game. It's like,
I don't care about the other stuff. I want this
game. Yeah, this is the game you need to do more of these things. And I think at this point, since this came out back in 2010, it deserves kind of a reprint. Or I mean, again, the production is Flying Frog production. And it's kind of hard to state if you don't know Flying Frog. This does not have the kind of, you know, B-movie actors. There's artwork in this game. And you get an alien faction. You are the aliens attacking Earth. A twist. You would not expect that twist. But it's a twist nonetheless. So you're attacking Earth. And you're attacking all of these quasi-famous locations on Earth back in the 1950s. And the humans are fighting back against you. So they have their own superhero. And again, their own military arms. And all of these kind of tropes from all of those 1950 throws back. Not to worry, because not only do you have your particular faction, your faction has all of these kind of wonderful cards that will give you special abilities and get to do different things. And there are special monsters, creatures, and spaceships that you can gain, especially with the expansion, that allow you to kind of, you know, take the land back from all those icky humans. But of course, the icky humans have the, you know, the Navy and the Marines that come in to support them as well. So it's a really fun co-op as you and your fellow aliens try to take over the Earth, but you can also play it competitively, which is also a lot of fun. So this is one of the few games, I can't think of any other game at this point, where I love to play the co-op and competitive as much as each other. And it's just such a funny, goofy kind of throwback game with a lot of really cool strategy and mechanics thrown into it. So Conquest of Planet Earth, the space alien game. It also has a very cool CD soundtrack. With,
yeah, of course it does.
Which has the different music from the different aliens. And I've actually played it. And I'm just like, yes, they went there. Yes, they went there. Yeah. Fun little game.
Yeah. This is such a funny thing. It is legit. Every time we're at Gen Con, we end up over at Flying Frog booth. You're like, oh man, look at all this cool stuff. And I'm like, yeah, the cosplayers.
That's right.
Good. But no, it's fantastic.
They have a Flying Frog Games, Flying Frog Productions has a super dedicated fan base. Yeah. It's not for this game, but I am the super dedicated fan base for this game. again, if you like this 1950s throwback, it's a lot of fun. I play with a lot of people. They've all enjoyed it. Some of the production is a little wonky, but it's definitely a throwback from the day. So a lot to enjoy there. All right, everyone. Well, there you go. It's a trip down, you know, the next 10 here. the 90 to 81. Hopefully you enjoyed this slot. If you haven't played these games, do go out and find copies and do get them to the table, because these are all very great games that do enjoy and do need to have some massive, beautiful tabletop time with you. All right, until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.